welcome to this episode of Talk Lately, a specialist health and safety podcast brought to you by Nance Limited. Today we're joined by David Harper, a seasoned veteran from the field of water safety. David, please introduce yourself.
Hello everybody, my name is David Harper. I'm a public health officer and I investigate outbreaks of waterborne diseases, be Legionella, Pseudomonas or whatever, not only in this country but abroad, all over the world. I also deal with cruise liners, submarines and many, many other things, oil rigs, gas rigs, and quite a priver of all sorts of engineering situations. I am the engineering part of this of an outbreak team, so when the medics go or the epidemiologists go out and investigate, an epidemiologist is a nice posh word for medical detective. And when they've identified the area of concern, it's my job then to go in as the engineering part of the team to engineer the problem out, to ensure that it's then the area or whatever is safe for people to frequent, i.e. say for instance, a hotel, if they have a problem with Legionella there, I go in, sort it all out, hopefully, and then people can stay there quite safely.
Obviously, you've been in the industry quite a while. Do you want to talk a little bit about your sort of background, how you started and got
yes,
into it?
Yes, the background of yours truly is that I served my apprenticeship. I went to school, primary school and everything one does in the younger day. And then my father said, I want you to get an apprenticeship. And I was always interested in repairing electrical things like televisions and radios in my younger day. So I went and did an electrical apprentice for 5 years at a place called Stanlow, the old refinery at Stanlow in Ellesmere Port on the Wirral, near Liverpool. And I then went to college and everything you do at college and so on and so forth. I'd always wanted to be a police officer. So when I finished my apprenticeship on the Friday, I joined Liverpool City Police Force on the Monday. And I was in there for about 4 years and ended up driving the police cars, all the old, you may have seen them in the television program, the Z cars. That's the type that I drove. But anyway, I got pensioned out of that for reasons I won't bore you with, other than being beaten up a few times. And I went back being an electrician. And I worked at the Atomic Energy Authority at Harwell and Cullum Laboratories in Oxfordshire. Rose to the dizzy heights of foreman, God knows why, but I did. And I then, as a youngster and single, sort of, I then applied for a job at Heathrow Airport and became electrical engineer south side. There was three of us, one for the north, one for the south and one for the centre, and I was obviously the south. And I was responsible, unfortunately, that's where the overhead pylons came in, 24/7, 365, from the pylons to the lights on the runway all the time. After that, there was a hospital over the way from the airport called Ashford Hospital. They wanted a chief engineer, so I applied for it and got it. Much more money, as you do when you're youngster, want more money. And that got me into the health service. I then eventually landed up at Kingston District General Hospital in Surrey, which was a 2,000-bed acute hospital, with all the usual A&E and maternity and everything else that went with it. I then was not only responsible for Kingston Hospital, but for other hospitals in the area. I now had in total about 100 and odd people working for me. But it all started from the Legionella point of view. On the Wednesday the 11th of July 1979, and I went to work as usual, and I don't know what time it was, I couldn't have a clue now, but say, let's say 10 o'clock, I was called to my big boss's office, and most unusual for me to go there, because, you know, I didn't. And I walked into his office thinking I was going to get a P45 or something, because I'd been a naughty boy somewhere along the line. I then got was introduced to all these people, professor of this and a professor of that and doctor of this and a doctor of that. And my boss, a guy called Tom Elwood, great guy, he said to me, he said, by the way, David, we've had three people die in the hospital. And I said to him, well, you know, to myself, I said, being a Scouser, I said, well, people do die in hospitals, unfortunately, is the way it goes. And but Tom said to me, they've died of something called Legionnaire's disease. And I remember looking him straight in the face and saying, what on earth is that? And he said, till about half an hour ago, till these people came into my office, neither did I. And that's where we were absolutely thrown right into the deep end. It was the first outbreak that ever happened in Great Britain to do with a hospital. There were all the minor ones going on, which I got involved in. So I won't bore you with those details at the present moment. One was Heysham and the other one was in Corby. But go on to that later on. And in those early days at Kingston Hospital, the medical profession knew very little about Legionella. And in the laboratories, it's rats, mice and guinea pigs. Now, from the medical side, it's unbelievable what they can do. And in the laboratory now, we're now into PCR testing. It's unbelievable the progress that has been made. But from the engineering point of view, back in 1979, we knew absolutely nothing. And what we then did, the public health laboratory services, now Public Health England, their research team came on board, and they were trying to find out, you know, what was going on in various ways, shapes or forms. And they were taking bloods from patient samples, and they were taking water samples and doing all sorts of various things. And they identified the first outbreak was at the cooling tower in the main, what we then call the surgical block, which is now called the Esher wing. But anyway, they found it in the cooling towers. And what actually happened here, with a bit of investigation and a bit of thought, the surgical block is an 8-storey block, and right on the roof of it, you've got air vents, one in each corner. The cooling tower is on level four, and the discharge from the cooling tower went up one of these vents to the roof. The particular vent it went up was the one which is right at the very far corner, and Kingston Hospital is partially built on a hill. So the Thames, the prevailing wind coming up the Thames, took out the aerosols from the cooling tower extraction, and because the hospital had an internal well, what actually then happened when we did smoke tests, we found that the smoke came into the internal wells and went in through the open windows. And this tied in very nicely with the people who contracted the Legionella, because they were in beds by these open windows. And the way I solved that one was to get some a drilling machine, some self-tapping screws, and they never opened those windows again. So that was the first problem with Kingston Hospital. We then upgraded the dosing system, which is very sort of very not very good at all, let me put it that way around. Then we introduced proportional dosing pumps, bleed valves and all sorts of various things, and upgraded it. Eventually we had the cooling tower removed, and we put craned on the roof and air coolers on the roof to keep the hospital going, or the surgical wing going. And because the research people were there, they were still taking water samples and bloods from patients and what have you. And then at the Christmas of 1979, they then found that we had another four people who contracted Legionnaire's disease. Three of them unfortunately died. No cooling towers now. Up till then, everybody thought that Legionella was to do with cooling towers. We now know it is, but there are many other things as well. What then actually happened is that they found the Legionella through the water sampling and the blood tests from the patients, that it was, as I said earlier, was in the main surgical block, and they found it in the domestic hot water system. They then, because in those early days we used to run the temperature of the domestic hot water, but we were totally unaware, and nobody knew, but that was the temperature range that Legionella liked, anything between 20 and 50 degrees centigrade. Optimum temperature is 37. Legionella can be frozen. You can freeze it in an ice cube and it will still survive. You can freeze it to absolute freeze, which is bad English, which is 273 Celsius, and it will still survive. Melt it naturally and give it the right temperature, give it the right nutrients or foods, and off it will go again. So it's a very, very hardy bug. But the trouble is now, I was then asked to raise the temperature up, and we did it in blocks of five, like 40, 45, 50 and so on, got it up to 60 degrees centigrade and found that it killed off the Legionella at 60 degrees centigrade, all dead within 2 minutes. So that now is worldwide accepted now. So a lot of what is now accepted in the Legionella field came from originally Kingston Hospital, which is famous for this. What then actually happened, now we were scalding the patients. I was then asked to try and get the temperature of the hot water back down again to 40, and I thought, well, I could see the reason why they raised it, but I thought it was a bit of a silly idea, but there we go, can't win them all. So I then wondered how the hell I was going to do it. I then had an idea that we had loads and loads of Horn showers around, the make Horn showers. So I got Mr. Horn down and I said, how about making one of your showers? Take all the fancy stuff off the shower, and can you then make it smaller? And my idea is to make it smaller so we can put the hot and cold going into it, and then the outlet can go to the tap, and we can control it with a little thermostat and a screw to lock it off. I said, money doesn't count, nice to say that, and I want it yesterday. So about a week and a half later, he came down into my office and plunked this valve on my brass valve on my desk. And he said, there you are, David, that's it. And I said to him, what do you call it? He said, valve. So I said, well, we better call it something a bit more sexier than that. So between us, we named it, thermostat to which it was, mixing to which it did, and a valve to which it was. Born TMVs, or thermostatic mixing valves. Now they're all over the world, and I must admit, I wished I'd have patented that, because I'd have been a millionaire overnight. But when you're young, you don't think of things like that. So that was that got out of the way. The next thing was then with the hot water chlorifiers, and for those who don't know what a hot water chlorifier is, that is a bigger version of the hot water cylinder you have in your airing cupboard at home, just bigger, basically. And what they wanted to do, we had vertical ones, and they, that's the research team, wanted me to have the whole volume of that at 60 degrees centigrade, so that when the cold water came into the bottom of it, if there was Legionella in the water, it would kill it off. So I thought, how am I going to do that? And I came up with the idea, and I called it a shunt pump. And what I did, I got a small piece of pipe from the top of the chlorifier with a valve, a non-return valve, a pump which was speed regulated, and down to the bottom by the drain with another valve, and then into the drain. And I called it a shunt pump, because it was shunting it from the top to the bottom. It's now called an anti-stratification pump. It's a new sexy name. So that then came into being. And then we were asked to disinfect the cold water storage tanks. And in the surgical block, we had three massive ones in the roof area. And I decided, as we all know, the chlorine level coming out of your tap outlet can be anything by law. The water undertaker has got to deliver it between 0.1 and 0.2, maximum is 0.5, and and that's law. We have to have it like that, for safe drinking. So I decided to go 5 parts per million. I thought, I'll kill this microbe off. So I did it at 5 parts per million, worked it out, the pH, because the higher the pH of the water, the less effective chlorine is as a disinfectant. So I then worked it all out, worked a few calculations out, and those calculations now are still standing to this day. And I disinfected the tank at 5 parts per million, or milligrams per litre, of free residual chlorine. And we just put it in, went for a cup of coffee, came back and emptied the tank. And that's what we did. And then we come to test it again. We found the Legionella was there. So I thought, I'll have you. So I then decided to go to 10 parts per million. And did it again, put it in, went with a cup of coffee, come back, emptied the tank, and the Legionella was still there. So I then did that upwards. So we went to 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. And when we got to 50 parts per million, or milligrams per litre, and we put it in, and the engineer said, right, well, it's late in the afternoon, can we leave it in overnight? So I said, yeah, no problem, because we can run on two tanks in the nighttime, but not in the daytime, we're going to have the three. So they left it in. The first thing the following morning, they came back, drained the tanks, filled it back up again, Legionella gone. Why? How's it gone now and it hadn't gone before? And the only difference was that we left it overnight. and looking back and then thinking about it more logically, I then realised that this bug is so, this Legionella bacteria is so minute. General size of it is about 3 microns, which is 3 millionths of a millimetre on your ruler. And what this bug can do, in inverted commas, can swim, for the want of a better word, through all the cracks and crevices of the rust and the sediment and what have you in the tanks and the pipework, and it gets right behind. So you have to have what I called soak time, which is now called contact time. So you have to leave the chlorine in at 50 parts per million, milligrams per litre, for the minimum of 1 hour. And that's where that came from. That is now worldwide accepted. And originally, what I've just mentioned, was known in the early days of Legionella control as the Kingston controls. But now, obviously, from 1979, 1980, when it all happened at Kingston, things have gone on, technology's gone on, and it's a different ballgame completely. But the basics are still there. It's simple engineering. We don't have any bells and whistles. And if you look at it from another point of view, is if you keep the water hot between 50 and 60 degrees centigrade, and that's the best way of getting rid of any microbe, keep the cold below 20 degrees centigrade after 1 minute of the tap opening, 2 minutes of the tap opening, sorry, on the cold, and 1 minute for the hot, sorry, I've got it the wrong way around there, and you keep the water moving. But the more stagnant the water is, the more likely you are to have problems, because bugs like stagnant water. And of course, if you keep the water clean, the cleaner you keep the water, the less nutrients are in there and the less problems you'll get. So the golden rules are: keep the water hot, keep the water cold, keep the water clean, and keep the water moving. You'll never get rid of all the bugs. You might do for a short period of time, but they will come back. They're ubiquitous in water. They're there all the time. In fact, Legionella, believe it or not, what lots of people don't realise, comes from the soil. And that goes back to an earthquake in San Francisco many years ago. And that's the problem.
Okay, and so obviously you spent a long time within the industry. You've seen it grow and develop and sort of evolve over the years. Is there anything that you've disagreed with in that time? Anything you'd have done differently or better within those sort of developments?
Well, what I've tried to do over the period of time is, I'm an engineer and I'm proud of it, okay? I've been brought up the hard way, you know. You fall off a bike and you don't fall off it again, do you? Because it hurts. And exactly, so it's exactly the same, the way that I've looked at this engineering side. And I found over the period of time, the simpler you keep the system, the better it is. The more bells and whistles you put on it, as I call it, excuse the pun, the more complicated it is, and more things you put on it, there is more areas where the Legionella bacteria can survive and hide, and this then can cause problems. One of the biggest problems we do find, putting my sort of investigator's hat on, is that the design and the installation of the systems. Some of these designers, not all of them, I quickly add, not all of them at all, but some of them, they just design the problems in because they think it looks nice and fancy. Well, yes, it might be, but that the bugs are not interested in that at all. They're not interested in the design and the aesthetics of the situation. And they design the problems in. And normally then, myself and the hospital, I'm just taking hospitals, it could be hotels, it could be schools, it could be factories, it could be anything. It could be ships, it could be cruise liners, submarines, it could be anything, oil platforms, anything. We then have to sort of design the problem or engineer the problems out, is one of my favourite sayings. And we, a lot of cases, they put all this fancy stuff in, the designers and the installers, and then, believe it or not, we take it out, and the system tends to work better. The simpler, the better. For instance, nowadays, 2019, for instance, a lot of these projects and capital works teams like to put TMVs, thermostatic mixing valves, in everywhere. You don't want them, because if you put them in, you've got to maintain them. And in lots of cases, when you do come to try to maintain them, they're behind panels, they're behind the back of toilets, you can't get at them. and they don't make it easy for the maintenance people to do it. And, you know, we are what we are. And if you can't get at it, you think, oh, well, I'll go back to that next time. And you never get round to the next time. So there are problems with these. It's same with flexible hoses from pipework to taps or something on a sink. They're there, yes. They're easy to fix. They stop you bending the copper and messing, you know, and all that, messing around, for the want of a better phrase. And 99 times out of 100, as soon as you get, and I'm saying a hospital now or a hotel, as soon as they get flexible hoses, they've designed them in, they've put them in, they've installed them, etc. The maintenance people come round and eventually take them out and put them in copper like it should have been done in the first place. So there's all those sorts of things. So what we try to do is we try to get hold of these design people and say, please do it this way. This is better for us all. But we do, and I'm afraid to say it, and I really shouldn't, but I'm going to say that some of the designers, they think, with all due respect, they know everything, and we've been doing it this like this for the last 30 years. Why should we change now? But technology's gone on, and you have to go on with technology. 30 years doesn't count in my books.
Okay, good to hear, good to hear. So in terms of technology advancing and new methods and control measures being introduced, filtration is one that is sort of growing more and more, we're finding in our experience. What's your take on using filters as either a replacement to control measures or a supplement, an addition to help with control?
Yes, well, the filters that you put on taps and on showers, for instance, yes. There are many different ones out there, different makes, different types, and for different things. Some of them are good. Most of them are good, I've got to say. But there are some out there which I put a question mark behind, in my experience. Yes, the only reason you really use these filters is when you have a problem. When you've got, say, in a hospital now, hospice will do anywhere like that. And what you've got to be careful of is if you've got problems, say, with Legionella at the tap outlets and whatever, you have got to protect the patients and the staff and the visitors. So while we put these filters on the taps and showers and whatever, and they will filter out the Legionella, Pseudomonas or whatever, but they're only on there as a short period of the time till the engineers have, inverted commas, engineered the problems out. Once it's back to normal, the filters come off. But when the filters come off, they have to be come off in a orderly manner. Because if you don't do that, you're then liable to cause cross-contamination, in the system, and you've got to be very, very careful. Yes, they're okay. Use them for what you've got to do, but don't leave them on as a permanent thing, because that means that you're spending a lot of money on these filters, and it's like a sticking plaster over a problem. That's all it is.
Good. Right, you mentioned TMVs earlier and using them in the correct situation. And we're asked the question is, what is a correct situation and what's an incorrect situation?
A correct situation, the TMVs, I mean, when we had them at Kingston Hospital when they were first sort of invented, roundabout way, I was told then by the medics or by the research team from the public health, you only put them on where you've got vulnerable patients. You don't put them on in the male changing room, or you don't put them on in a theatre suite or the ITU, for instance. You wouldn't put them in the admin block or anywhere like that, because there's just ordinary people there. If you've got them, you've got to maintain them. And I know some hospitals where we've got three or four blokes and they do nothing else all day long, all year round, maintaining TMVs. So, and TMVs are very susceptible to causing problems with Legionella and other waterborne organisms. So, yes, have them where you want them. Have them where the vulnerable people are, by all means. But don't put them everywhere. And I just come back to you on this one thing. Have you got a TMV at home for your wife and family?
I don't think I have, as it goes.
No, right. So, yeah, okay. And people say, I might get scolded at work. We get scolded at home as well. So, you know, what's the difference?
What's the difference? Yeah, exactly.
And with all due respect, I mean, I know my kids only put their hands under the hot tap once and they never did it again.
Never do it again, yeah.
Then you only fall off a bike once. It hurts, so you don't fall off it again. You soon learn. Same difference.
Good, good. So, okay, in terms of technology then, and the field ever advancing, remote monitoring is coming more and more, and these devices, while they are getting more and more tested and secure, will they ever replace traditional temperature monitoring to temperature control measures? It's can you trust a device that you're putting around a pipe to check a temperature as opposed to doing it yourself?
Well, yes, there are some good temperature monitoring units out there which are electronic. Some of them have got SIM cards in them and they send it off wireless to a base controller somewhere or other, and that goes back to somewhere else. And so, yes, you control them. And yes, you've got 24 hour monitoring. Good thing, I'm no way am I knocking it. You can have them measuring every 2 minutes, every 5 minutes. You can set them up to do more or less what you really want. But you've got to remember that when you're putting these monitors, strapping these monitors onto a piece of pipe off around a, I don't know, tap or whatever it may be, or near to a tap, you must make quite sure that you clean the pipework and the device is actually right round the pipework, not just touching one small piece of the round pipe. So it's got to be done properly. And also, then that goes back to wherever. Then they normally have an alarm system on, which is then set up, you know, that if it goes below whatever or goes above whatever, an alarm comes up and warns somebody. But you've also, when you're doing the warning somebody bit, you also got to make quite sure that somebody is connected to that via, let's say, a mobile phone. And so if it goes off at 3 o'clock in the morning, your mobile phone goes off by the side of your bedside cabinet at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can do something about it. So it's not just from 8 in the morning till 5 at night type of thing. They're very good. Yes, they are. We go with them, or I go with it. There's no problem with it at all. But you must make quite sure that what it says on the tin, it does it. So on a regular basis, who's ever pieces of equipment in, they should come back and recalibrate their main server or however they're recording. There's various ways of doing it, and recalibrate and make quite sure and manually check that piece of equipment which is strapped to the pipe underneath the sink, to ensure that what it's reading on the screen the other end is actually what it is. So you manually go there and test it with a digital thermometer. So yes, it is. But the other thing you've got to remember, that you can have it digital, no problem at all, but as I've just said, you must have it calibrated on a regular basis and a calibration sheet so you can prove it if anything happens and you land up in court. And the other thing is, you must be able to print off in hard copy the results, and all results must be kept for 5 years. All results must be kept for 5 years. Reason: for compensation claims in the court.
Okay, solid. So you've mentioned you've spent a lot of time obviously in the field and sort of picking up on pros and cons, like good points and bad points within systems and the like. What have been your common sort of stumbling points, or where people have gone wrong? What in your opinion is where everybody gets this wrong, and that's what's the leading cause for Legionella issues or water faults effectively?
Basically, one of the biggest problems we do find is underused outlets. So the designers come along and they use all, you know, like, let's take a hotel or a hospital, whatever. And some of the rooms are used a lot, some of them aren't. And if you have rooms that are not used on a regular basis, you then have to put a flushing regime in. Now, a flushing regime in a healthcare premises is normally twice a week on an outlet. In an ordinary, say, a hotel, that would be once a week, because obviously in hospitals, they're vulnerable people. So, but flushing is one of the big and underused outlets. And in lots of cases, we find, not just hotels, hospitals, and all over the show, they tend to put too many in. you know, they, oh, I think we'll have one in that corner, we'll have one in that corner. And I've seen in storerooms and cleaners' cupboards where they've basically got a couple of sinks in there, one for wash-handing and one for the bucket sink, slop sink or whatever. And you open the door and you have to fight your way in through all the stores that they've put in there. So they're not going to move all that lot out just to flush that tap, just to flush those taps. So they've got a dead leg. When you have dead leg situations, stagnant water, Legionella, Pseudomonas and anything else, they absolutely love it. And then, of course, that then can spread around the system. And sometimes when you do the investigation, you can actually find that all the Legionella positives, when you've taken water sample, can be in one corner of a ward or one corner of a block or something. And then when you look in at that particular area, you then find, look at that cleaner's cupboard. It hasn't been used. And sort it all out. And normally, we land up taking the sinks and the slop hoppers out and just taking everything out. And when you do take everything out, you must also definitely ensure that you remove all the pipework right back to the flow, main flow and returns.
Okay, so we'll stick on that theme for the time being then, and in terms of advice and guidance. What's the one piece of key advice everyone should know when they're responsible for water systems or controlling bacterial growth within water effectively? Mm. What's the one bit of advice you'd give to them as they must know this, if nothing else?
Well, just taking the Legionella point of view, I mean, what you have to do there is to make quite sure you know the basics of how the bug itself grows and how the bug itself can affect people. And of course, with Legionella, there are four main ways of contracting Legionnaires. And it's if you may or may not know, Legionella is a lower respiratory tract infection. It's a lung infection. And it always starts at the bottom of the lung and then works its way up, believe it or not. So you've got to know how people can get infected. And then you've got to think that how to engineer that problem out if there is a problem. So it's a lot of it is back to basics. It really, really is. And so anybody who wants to know about it, the basic controls of where it is, how the bug lives and how it multiplies and its food sources, etc., and the temperature range it likes, all that you must know that as basic information, especially if you're a risk assessor or something like that. You've got to know that. And there are courses out there which are run by all sorts of various companies, and you've got to make quite sure that the company that you go with or the trainer that is training knows what he's talking about. There are lots of these companies out there, unfortunately, and I've got to be quite honest about it, who run these training courses for Legionella. They talk about Legionella for, you know, the first half hour or a couple of hours, and then the rest of the day is spent on telling you how good their products are. And that is not a training course at all. That's just a sales gimmick, and that should be stopped. So you've got to have the basics of it, and you've definitely got to have the basics of a plumber, how water flows through pipes and how it does what it does do and everything else. So you must have that basic knowledge. And to that end, what is happening now, and I'm not sure if everybody knows this, but there is a process going on behind the scenes, believe it or not, where we are going to try and get all the plumbers registered, similar to Gas Safe and similar to, you know, the electrical side of things. So that the people, we, inverted commas, are trying to remove the cowboys and have the professionals do it. But training is the base thing. And to do a risk assessment, I've been doing risk assessments now since 79. And I'm still learning. You learn something different every day. So it's very basically back to basics. Know how a water system works, basically. And again, going back to what I said earlier on, keep the water hot, keep the water cold, keep the water clean, and keep the water moving. And make the system itself as simple as possible. Take all the bells and whistles off. And you can't go much wrong in that, doing things like that.
Okay, and when you mentioned bells and whistles, for sake of argument, can you give us an example of what might be a
necessary argument? Yes, certainly. I mean, for instance, you know, people like all these fancy bits and pieces on the system. And one of the things that we do come up against on many occasions on my investigations and what have you is that people have come up taking water samples and they've come up with Legionella. and they've tried a little bit of engineering, and they think, then somebody comes along and says, ah, I'll tell you what you ought to do. We'll get rid of your Legionella. We'll sell you a, and I'm just saying this for just an example, nothing more than that, an example, say chlorine dioxide. So they put all the chlorine dioxide in at great expense, and then it's not maintained properly. It's not the way that you look after chlorine dioxide. You have to take readings of chlorine dioxide from various taps throughout the whole of the building, not just at the unit itself. Else otherwise, it's just a waste of time. One other thing you've got to remember is that if you do start using chemicals, the microorganism cells, Legionella for instance, because they multiply so rapidly, you can actually find that they actually get, the bugs actually get used to the chemical. So in chlorine dioxide, you're not allowed to have it any more than 0.5 milligrams per litre in a drink, in a water system where people can consume it, because if it goes higher than that, it can actually then cause other medical problems within you. But I've known systems where it's gone up to 1.5 parts per million, and that is totally wrong. So you've got to be careful. There's pluses and minuses, but you've got to look at it as an individual situation, where it is. Is it a hospital? Is it a hotel? Is it a school? Or whatever. So, yes, I'm trying to answer your question, but in a sort of a roundabout way, because there's much, much, much more to it than that. And of course, there are other disinfections out there. Silver hydrogen peroxide, there's peroxide, it's hydrogen peroxide itself. There's silver copper ionization, where you use silver and copper. Silver kills all known bugs in the world, and copper just, the copper sulfate from the copper reduces the, or gets rid of the bioslime within the pipework. If you get rid of the bioslime within the pipework, that's the habitat and the food source for these bugs like Legionella, and they will just clear off and go elsewhere.
Good, good. What's, say, an ideal control scenario for yourself then? It's money no object, building no object, you can pick and choose whatever you want. What's the ideal method of control from your expert
opinion? The main thing, as I've got to keep saying this, I would do it very, very simply. For instance, if you've got, say, a hotel, whatever, obviously there's many, many rooms in hotels. Not all the rooms get used every night. It's rather obvious. So you've got to have a flushing regime on that for the rooms that are not being used. Okay, and that normally comes down to the housekeeper, who has to go in there and clean it and flush the showers and do all that sort of stuff. So that's normal. But from a simple point of view, mains water coming in, that's it. I mean, end of story. You've got to have it coming in from somewhere. When you're talking about boreholes and reservoirs, that's a different ball game completely. So I think at this point in time, we'll keep away from that. We'll just have the mains water coming in. In lots of situations, and one of the best ways of doing it nowadays, or in the old days, the water used to come in and go to some tanks up in the roof space somewhere, and then it was gravity fed all around the rest of the building. But nowadays, with the advancement of technology, you now get things like what they call pressurization systems. So the mains water comes into a brick tank. We use the word tank, that's not the proper name for it really, it's cistern, but everybody calls it a tank. So it comes into the basement somewhere or other, and then it's pumped from there through what they call booster pump units, and normally one booster set goes to the cold water side and the other one goes to the hot water side, sticking with the cold first. Then that goes all round at a pressure predetermined by the height of the building and all sorts of other engineering sort of calculations you have to do. On the hot side, depending where you are, in Great Britain, some cases like, say, the Thames water area is very hard water. If you go down to, say, Cornwall, Devon, it's very soft water. Parts of Scotland are soft, some parts of Scotland are hard water. So then you most probably have a salt water softener in the hard areas, so that the scale doesn't build up in the hot water pipe, like the scale builds up in your kettle at home. So you put a salt water softener in there, then that water from that softener then goes to the hot water chlorifiers. And as I said earlier on, hot water clarifier is just a bigger version than the hot water cylinder in your airing cupboard at home. There might be one of them, there might two of them, and that's one way of heating the water up with a big hot water clarifier. Or there are now more modern ways of doing it, and they're what is known as plate heat exchangers. And again, they are very efficient, but if you have a plate heat exchanger, please do not have what is known in the trade as a buffer vessel on it, because that's where they're storing the water. And if that is the case, the rules and regulations concerning hot water clarifiers also then apply to your buffer vessel. Therefore, you've got every month, you've got to take the temperature from the flow, the return, and you've got to open the drain valve on the bottom to remove any sediment that may have collected in the base of it. So there are a number of ways of doing it, but the big problem, the big thing there is that you have to keep the water hot, going back to that again, and it's always that. So try and keep the water simple, the water system simple. So the cold water, it goes up to the top of the building and all the taps are off it or whatever. But the point is, with a cold water system, you've got to remember that it's like a dead leg, right? And the only time that that water will move in a cold system is when you open a tap. So what we now do, because they have this dead, you know, water's not being used, it gets warmed up and then off goes the Legionella, and et cetera, et cetera. What we now do, and I've done this on a number of areas, whereby I put a return on the cold. Now, this might sound actually ludicrous to some people, but I've done this on hotels, hospitals, and all sorts of various places, and it works. So where you've got this dead leg, and sometimes this pipework goes through ceilings in the roof void or somewhere, and the temperature up there can come up to ambient temperature, that is, can become 30 or 40 degrees centigrade, no problem, which then, of course, heats the insulation around the pipework. That heats up to ambient. That then heats the copper pipe inside that, which then obviously then heats the fluid up. So that's how the Legionella gets its heat and source form. But if you get some microbore pipework, microbore about 10 or 14 mil pipework, and right at the very end of these lines, put an break it up and put a boiler fix valve in there with a handle on it, hopefully, and then connect this pipe, this microbore pipework, and feed it right back. It's a bit of a pain to do, but once you've done it, you'll have no problems with Legionella. And I'm just talking about the cold now, and you feed that all the way back to the break tank in the basement, wherever it is, and just let it trickle over in the top. So the pressure is pushing it round. So you've made the cold water a flow and return in a sort of a way. The hot water side, again, ensure that you've got the flow and return. It's all been balanced up properly. And so you've got the flow of the hot water going out from the clarifiers or plate exchange, whatever, at 60 degrees Celsius, maybe 62 or something. But what you're aiming at is the temperature coming back into the clarifiers or plate heat at hopefully at about 55 degrees centigrade. It's got to be more than 50, but if you can aim for 55, you're then keeping the Legionella and everything out of, you know, in control. Yeah. That's just simply saying, but there are other options. But basically, keep the water simple, keep the pipework simple, keep it hot, keep it cold, all that again, and you shouldn't get many problems at all.
Okay. You mentioned briefly water softeners there.
Yes.
And now, obviously, we've come across more newer technology, like with water conditioners becoming more prevalent within the field. Do you have any opinions on water conditioners or softeners?
Yeah. If it depends on the situation again. It's horses and courses, to believe it, to be quite honest with you. Yes, you might have to have a water conditioner because, I don't know, the nitrates might be too high or something. I don't know. It could be anything.
Yeah.
And when I go to a site, I take my test kits with me, and a lot of the time I take a chlorine test, a pH test. I might take an iron, I might take a copper, see if anything that is leaching off into the system or many other things. But yes, it's horses and courses. I can't say, yes, they are good, you put them everywhere. No, because it's bells and whistles again. You want to try and keep it simple. Yes, there are situations where you have to, end of story.
Okay, well... sort of wrapping down there then, because I'm realising the time. So I'd like to thank you very much for coming along with us today, and hopefully we'll have you back again in the future.
No problem at all, and thank you for inviting me.
Been a pleasure. Thank you for listening to this episode of Talk Lately. As always, we're interested in hearing what you've got to say, comments, thoughts, feedback. please get in touch in the section below or drop us an email. We hope you'll join us again for another chat with the industry-leading experts.